Welcome back. This is Back to Reality. You're listening to IRB English Radio. Sister Bita and Sister Rehana are in here, and I am at your service as well, where we're talking about, are we really considered as the real followers of Imam Ali alayhi salam and Ahlul Bayt generally, or we're just called like that, like the followers of those honorable people, and how those people are defined, and what are the things that I can attribute to myself and develop them in my characteristics in order to be called a follower of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So as a mother, Sister Rehana, you have mentioned that you are a mother, and then mothers also have got some definitions according to Imam Ali alayhi salam. How would you contribute to this adjective of being called a follower of Imam Ali alayhi salam? What are the responsibilities of mothers who are under the, under this umbrella that, okay, we're called the followers of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam?
Well, mostly, a mother has the role of teaching the next generation. And
she's a role model, of course, for her children.
Yes, but not just by action, but also by teaching, like telling the stories of Ahlul Bayt, telling the stories of Imam Ali, peace be upon him. And by teaching those things to a mother, if she teaches those things to her children and develops the love of Imam Ali in their hearts, in her children's hearts from a young age, I think that would fulfill her role mostly. Just educating her children and creating that love, nourishing that, nurturing that in her children. That would be one of the greatest roles, I think. I suppose that is correct, of course. As a mother, if a mother is not just between her children and she has preferential treatments and she always prefers one child over another in their fights, that would be very bad. we must take a leaf out of Imam Ali's page and just like the story that there's something that my mother always used to do, and she learned it from Imam Ali, peace be upon him. And whenever me and my sister were fighting over something, like maybe a piece of candy, she would always give one of us the role of cutting that thing in half and the other one to choose that half. So this was one of the things that she learned from Imam Ali. And she implemented that in the way that she treated us. That way, both children learn to be just and to give a fair share among each other.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very true. So the role of mother is to teach them. And of course, through her characteristics as a role model to her children, through her being just, being fair, being kind, teach them kindness and teach them not to be brutal toward other people around. As children go to school, they would learn things that are not according to what their mothers have always taught them. So it's not just being a good teacher. It's just it's not monitoring children. It's, implementing things inside their souls so that they would never forget them, just as Sister Rehana mentioned them. And you, Sister Abita, as a girl, as a youth, what are the things that we could do to be considered as the followers of Imam Ali alayhi salam?
Actually, it's a huge responsibility for youth generation to be a follower. And the thing is, the most important thing you have to do as a youth is to resist this temptation you have to do bad things.
Well, that's very important.
And that's really difficult because we're living in a world full of social medias, full of
glosses, places, slogans, and notions.
Everything is accessible, okay? If you want drugs, you can go into the street and there is someone. You can find
it
in less than 2 minutes.
If you want corruption, it's just right in front of you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So to call ourselves a follower of Imam Ali alayhi salam brings a lot of responsibilities with it. And it does not go with only beautiful words. We have to practice them in our life. And practicing that is not easy. We have to, just as the sisters mentioned, we have to learn many things for ourselves. We have to educate ourselves. And through these educations, we're going to develop such a perfect, magnificent characteristics that would be considered as a follower of Imam Ali alayhi salam. So thank you for staying with us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, ya Rabb al-alamin, يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رايزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رايزك لتصي دليلتك once again
in the limelight.
The Zionist regime's propaganda, dropped from the air, is designed to demoralize Palestinians and get them to turn on each other, yet often has the opposite effect. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Israeli regime forces are using psychological warfare on the 2.3 million residents of the Gaza Strip to try to demoralize them, spread disinformation and turn them against the resistance group Hamas. The primary tools of such campaigns are leaflets dropped from planes and balloons, propaganda tactics used in the two world wars by both sides, and in the American attacks on Vietnam and Iraq. During those conflicts, the leaflets called on groups to surrender. The German Nazi Joseph Goebbels said about the leaflets dropped by the Allies, "Their leaflets are addressed to the weakest points in the nation. They are weapons, and we must be careful with all weapons." One of the present Israeli regime campaign, Aliyah Kassab, 23, said, "When leaflets were dropped on Gaza 2 months ago, my little brothers were happy to see colored papers falling from the sky. They thought it was a new interesting activity, but the rest of us were terrified. We knew the consequences." Recently, and just a few days away from the start of Ramadan, the Zionist regime forces airdropped leaflets on Gaza, marking the Muslim holy month. Palestinians denounced it as a form of psychological torture. The leaflets call on citizens to feed the needy and speak kindly during a time when hundreds of thousands in the besieged territory are at risk of starvation because of the Israeli blockade on food and water. Scores of Palestinians have died because of dehydration and malnutrition since the start of the war on October 7th, following the Zionist regime's decision to cut off all food, aid, electricity and fuel for the already besieged enclave. The leaflets written in Arabic had images of lanterns typically used as Ramadan decorations. They included a prayer asking God that fasts are accepted and sins are forgiven and that Palestinians in the region have a delicious breaking of the fast. The 2023-24 assault is not the first time the Zionist regime has deployed leaflets as a tool of warfare. In 2014, they were used extensively to turn civilians against each other and spread terror. And in 2018, they were dropped into Gaza's neighborhoods to evacuate the area near Gaza's eastern border. The Zionist regime's leaflets are often tailored to specific audiences, with their messages customized based on the demographics and neighborhoods of the residents being targeted. Starting in October 2023, the Israeli regime militarily divided the Gaza Strip into blocks, and subsequently, according to that division, leaflets were dropped. A leaflet dropped on January 6, 2024 said, "Urgent warning to inhabitants of the following neighborhoods and blocks: Al-Amal, Al-Sadra, Al-Faruq, Ain Jalut, and the blocks 2232, 2339, 2340, 2343, 2347, 2348. And district you are in is considered a battlefield." Threatening messages such as "anyone who chooses not to evacuate from the northern part of Gaza to the south will be considered terrorist" are used to manipulate residents into leaving their homes and abandoning their belongings. One leaflet dropped into the north of Gaza last year said, "No need for you to bring water and food. We will take care of that matter." Yet 800,000 Palestinians in Gaza are now at risk of death due to starvation and thirst. Israeli messaging also often distorts the facts to advance a particular narrative or agenda. This can involve spreading rumors, exaggerating weaknesses, or downplaying its own losses to look stronger. To try to win converts, sometimes the leaflets play on the religious sentiments of the citizens and tie into important dates in Gazan culture. Leaflets dropped by Israeli regime aircraft on February 8, 2024 said, "Marking the day of Isra and Mi'raj, Hamas excluded Palestinians from Al-Aqsa Mosque. Hamas will execute all Gazans from their bright future." Leaflets commonly include a call to action, urging the target audience to take specific steps or make certain decisions, such as to surrender, resist the leadership, or move out of a particular area. Time and again, however, Palestinians in Gaza have learned not to trust what they are told. For example, although they were instructed by leaflets during the current aggression to evacuate further south, the Zionist regime forces later bombed those so-called safe locations. Yasmin Matar, 25, said, "My family and I evacuated 7 times according to the commands given by the leaflets. They said, each time we evacuate to a place they call safe, they drop another leaflet to inform us that it's not safe anymore. In one of the places, we were besieged by Israeli army tanks and helicopters. They didn't even warn us." Yet, the Zionist regime often tries to use these evacuation leaflets as proof to other governments and courts that it is acting humanely by warning civilians before attacks. Another type is leaflet is designed to demoralize citizens, sow doubts in their leadership, and stir up internal conflict. Gaza residents are stressed and scared due to the ongoing Israeli aggression, and this type of pressure makes it more difficult to remain resilient and interconnected. For example, the Zionist regime aircraft 2 weeks ago began dropping small magazines called Al-Waqa, which means "the events," containing messages written specifically to encourage people to turn against their own people. But does this method of propaganda work? To some extent, it depends on people's morale. However, as in most previous wars, the answer overall is no. If anything, they breed resentment and reinforce hatred. Rehaf Abu Zarifa, a 22-year-old Gazan programmer, said, After my family and I evacuated to Khan Yunis, aircraft dropped leaflets. But we were not frightened. I even witnessed people, including my brothers, collecting these flyers to use them to light a fire, since wood and coal are now expensive and hard to find.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio.Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Face to face.
I'm Marzia Hashimi and very happy to bring you a very special Hidden Files today, dealing with the situation in Palestine and talking to someone who understands and knows the Zionist regime very well. I'm very happy to welcome to the program Sheikh Talal Abdurrahman Sharim, a former prisoner in Israeli regime prisons, and he's also currently the head of the prisoners' files for Hamas. Thank you so much, Sheikh, for being with us here on Hidden Files. Now, as a former prisoner who spent 18 years in Israeli jails, how much do you value your freedom today, and how hopeful are you about the liberation of the occupied Palestinian territories?
I seek refuge in Allah from the curse of Satan. May peace and blessings of Allah be upon the most honorable creation and the master of Prophet Muhammad and upon all his family. First of all, thank you for having me today to clarify issues regarding the prisoner's file. Currently, I'm in charge of this file. No one can speak about a prison better than the one who was jailed in it. According to poetry, no one knows the difficulty of something except those who are grappling with it. Freedom is priceless and a must. If I want to maintain my dignity, I have to preserve this homeland. Hence, what we pursue, which is the liberation of Palestine, is precious, and the price that we pay is high. The Palestinian detainee suffers two pains. The first pain when his house is raided by the occupation's army. The troops detonate the doors using bombs and then enter the home and begin ransacking it, destroying everything inside. They terrify the children, women and fathers and mothers in plain sight of the prisoner who is handcuffed behind his back. Any person in that house who wants to protest or speak is hit in plain sight of the entire family. This is the first suffering that the detainee grapples with. The army ransacks the house and takes everything inside. If the troops find money, they steal it. They also steal the jewelry of the women, and they take any electronic devices, such as computers and phones. They confiscate everything. And if the prisoner has a car, they also seize it under the pretext that it was used in supporting terrorism. That prisoner is taken in plain sight of the children who scream. This also constitutes a suffering for the family, for the children, for the women, for the father and for the mother. Afterwards, the second suffering that the prisoner will endure begins when he is placed in the army troops' vehicle and taken for interrogation. On the way to the interrogation, the detainee is physically and verbally assaulted and hears blasphemous words. All of that is part of a psychological torture that precedes the interrogation. We will talk about the interrogation later in the interview, but I want to say that the interrogation is inhuman. Allah the Almighty said in the Quran, "Indeed, we have dignified the children of Adam." So it doesn't make sense that another child of Adam comes and breach your freedom and attack you and your ideas and religion and doctrine. That's kind of insane, but as I have said, Palestine is precious. Palestine is the heart of the Arab and Muslim world, and whatever sacrifices we make, they will remain slight compared to the goal of liberating Palestine.
Well, according to human rights groups, more than 8,000 Palestinians are currently lodged in Israeli jails. Can you share more specific details about the total number of detainees, including those arrested since October the 7th?
Unfortunately, there is false information even among the human rights groups, the Red Cross, etc. But as a person who is in charge of that file, I will give you the accurate figures. Before October 7th, some 5,200 detainees were imprisoned, including about 450 children and minors under the age of 18, and 35 women. The rest of the detainees were men. But after October 7th, the occupation authorities launched a crazy, brutal campaign against Palestinians, arresting members of the Legislative Council, engineers, doctors, university students, general public, former prisoners, women and children. Now, the number of Palestinians held in Israeli jails exceeds 12,000. That means 7,000 more Palestinians have been detained since October 7th. That's kind of insane because about 7,000 people were detained during just 4 months. Between 7,000 and 8,000 people are also reported missing, and their whereabouts are unknown. So we're talking about a huge number of detainees and prisoners. These were the actual figures of Palestinian detainees held in Israeli jails.
We often come across horrifying stories of systematic torture inside Israeli jails. Inmates electrocuted, deprived of food and sleep, denied medical care, handcuffed and assaulted, and even sexual abuse. Does the apartheid regime use torture as a weapon of war against Palestinians?
I have been detained 10 times since the first Intifada or uprising in 1987. I was detained and released 10 times, so I have a lot of experience and have a lot to say about what takes place during the interrogations and about the horrifying stories I heard from my fellow detainees. Regarding torture, I have said that the torture starts from the moment of arrest and continues until the end of the interrogation. During the interrogation, all inhuman techniques are used, such as stripping the detainees of his clothes, with the interrogator mocking him or flirting with him as a kind of assault. But honestly, no sexual assault takes place, and I haven't heard something about that. The individual, however, could be threatened with sexual assault. The wives or sisters of some of the detainees were also detained and brought to the interrogation. There, the men were threatened with subjecting their wives or sisters to sexual abuse if they refused to make a confession. This is a method to force the detainees to speak and make a confession. Some of the detainees break down and speak up as they want their wives, sisters, or mothers to return home, and subsequently the interrogator gets what he wants. Sometimes it is the detainees who threaten the interrogators that if their wives or sisters were not freed, they would witness unprecedented things. These strong men instilled fear in the regime's authorities that later released those women who were used as tools to exert pressure on their husbands or brothers who were being interrogated. Regarding the other techniques, I personally spent a week, 7 days, sitting on a chair with my hands cuffed behind my back and my face covered. I spent 7 days without sleep and without food during the fasting month of Ramadan. They were giving us just one meal every 2 or 3 days. When I was asking for water, they were spilling water on the floor. So if you wanted to drink water, you had to drink the water spilled on the floor. These were among the interrogation techniques. There were other techniques that depended on the case or the method adopted by the interrogator. There was the good guy, bad guy technique, where one interrogator speaks nicely, kindly asking the detainee whether he has a wife and children, and speaks about releasing him and giving him money in order to encourage him to speak up. In return, there was an aggressive interrogator who was beating, insulting, and spitting on the detainee, and doing everything you can imagine. What's currently happening in Israeli jails is harsher than what happened in the U.S. detention centers of Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay. I can say that they all learned from the same source how to torture and humiliate the people. There are many methods of torture in jails that require several interviews in order to address them, as each person and each charge has a certain method. Sometimes interrogations result in deaths. In Israeli jails, more than 5 were killed due to torture. They were suffocated while being handcuffed. They put a piece of cloth on the mouth of the detainee. The detainee could be suffering from a disease and the interrogator doesn't know that, and subsequently, such techniques could result in his death. Some people died during the interrogations. When I was in the Tolkien Central Prison, one of the detainees who was sitting next to me during the interrogation was martyred. He died due to torture. Then, there are many methods of torture. Sometimes they even resort to Israel's Supreme Court to obtain a license to torture ruling because the interrogator doesn't want to bear the responsibility of that severe torture and wants the court to be responsible instead if that detainee dies. So they obtain a decision from the court and sit the detainee down and shake him for a long period of time, and that subsequently inflicts a brain injury on him that leaves him either dead or mentally ill. Some people die because of that method of heinous torture. What people watch on TV is nothing compared to what actually happens. You saw how they stripped scores, hundreds and thousands of people of their clothes in front of cameras amid freezing temperatures, let alone what happens behind closed doors. They strip people of their clothes and put them on a wet floor and turn on air conditioners, switching back and forth from cooling to heating. During 1 to 2 days, those detainees fall ill due to that method of torture. All these methods were aimed at pressing the detainee to forcibly admit to something. There are methods that are less heinous, but still heinous, such as imprisoning the individual in a certain room with people portrayed as honorable Palestinian detainees and fighters, but in fact, they are spies who work for the Israeli regime and deceive the detainee to obtain information from him. There are other soft techniques, such as providing the detainee with the most delicious food. While the detainee is hungry, the interrogator brings delicious food and begins eating and asks the detainee if he wants to share him the food, saying, "How are you? Here you are." If the detainee ate, he will also be offered coffee, tea, cigarettes, etc. That's another method to obtain confession from the weak people. But the real fighters refuse to eat or drink anything. No matter how much I spoke about methods of torture, they still exceed the imagination. And what we currently see is just part of the suffering that Palestinian detainees are grappling with in Israeli jails. That was concerning the interrogation phase. In the next stage, and after a forced confession is written, the detainee could be sent from cells to another place that we call the big prison. There, he sees his fellow detainees and begins a new life compatible with the prison's laws, which are set by the regime's authorities, who place each 4 or 5 people in a 2x2 or 2x3 meter room. There are also larger rooms, such as 10 by 5 meter rooms, in which 30 to 40 prisoners are placed. Then the prisoners are diverse. That was what I had to say in brief about the issue of the torture of detainees.
I mean, it's so unbelievable and so heartbreaking hearing what the prisoners go through because of the Zionist regime. And recently, a statement by the Palestinian Prisoners Club said detainees are being denied medical care, not transferred to clinics or hospitals in case of medical emergency. Is it because of their protests against the inhumane prison conditions?
While we're in a state of war, all the laws have changed. Despite its ugliness, the occupation ultimately adheres to the law of the International Committee of the Red Cross or some international and human rights bodies in order to appear democratic and civilized. But all the masks have fallen amid the ongoing war. There's no democracy, there are no human rights, no humanity in the Israeli regime's dealings. So we see it innovating new torture techniques for the sake of deterrence. The regime used to insult to obtain forced confession. But now, and amid the war, the regime aims at pressing the resistance. The regime uses the scenes of the arrest of women and children in order to press the resistance to submit to its demands. Then they want to obtain what they fail to obtain through weapons and explosives and through murders and physical assaults by pressuring the fighters when they witness the mistreatment of their women, children, and people. That is a means of pressure and a dirty war. Any war has its own means, such as a means of destruction, such as bombs and weapons of mass destruction. But the other means is to torture the civilians who are not involved in any operations in order to press the fighters to give up and raise the white flag. The more dirty method is that occupation deprives people from food and water. In northern Gaza, we have famine in every sense of the word. There is no edible thing there. There are more than 60,000 pregnant women who have nothing to eat. How will their fetuses be nourished? Dozens of fetuses die in their mothers' wombs, and those who are born alive find no milk or drink. The babies have nothing to eat and subsequently die. There are cases of child deaths due to malnourishment. In prisons, we knew the meaning of hunger because we went on hunger strikes to restore our rights that the prison's authorities deprived us from or to protest against punitive measures adopted against us. Sometimes, we didn't eat anything for a month or 2 months, so we felt pains, including in the head and the knee, and grappled with weakness. After 2 to 3 weeks, the hunger striker becomes unable to stand up and walk, and instead remains in bed. Thus, hunger leaves people collapsed. The case now is not concerning a number of hunger strikers in prisons, but concerning an entire nation that is suffering. More than 700,000 people in Gaza have no food. Israel also destroys medical facilities such as hospitals and medicines. There are no medicines in Gaza. There are 10,000 cancer patients in Gaza, and they have no medication and are dying slowly. Regarding the normal cases, we have over 350,000 patients who don't even have access to a Panadol tablet for the headache, let alone those whose legs or hands have been amputated. How will they be treated? Many of them see their bodies decompose. And when a decomposed part of their body is amputated, another part begins to decompose. So they cut the other part off after a week or so on. Someone told me that he buried his father in three phases as his father's hand and leg were cut off during a strike on their house. So the son took them and buried them under the ground. Later, that same family was targeted in another strike that amputated his father's second leg. So the son took it and buried it in another cemetery. The father later died due to those injuries. So the son buried him for the third time. Can you imagine that a person can be buried in three phases? Where does that happen? All of that take place amid the world's silence. I mean, the entire world, including human rights organizations and the United Nations, all their meetings are fruitless. That's because Israel is the spoiled son of the United States. Israel is the U.S.'s dirty tool in the region. So we fight for the sake of our dignity and in order to restore our land. no matter the price that we pay, that will remain little compared to the restoration of our dignity and the preservation of our land and sanctities. God willing, we will move forward on the path until the end.
Earlier this month, a human rights group cited shocking testimonies from recently freed detainees, including the Israeli military, inviting settlers to watch the gory torture of Palestinians. On the other hand, we saw how Israeli captives spoke highly of their captors. I mean, what does this say about the two sides?
I spoke about part of those scenes, but there is another tragedy. These are settlers. Settlers have violated the remaining part of the Palestinian land, going beyond the part granted by the world. The world gave Israel a state and gave Palestine a state, but it was not established. Day by day, settlers steal the land. The disaster is that the settlers burn and rob the houses and attack the Palestinians and do whatever they want, while the Israeli army does not move a muscle. The army sees everything. What hurts more is that the army brings those settlers to the prisons to see how Palestinian detainees are humiliated, or subsequently they boost the morale of their people and settlers through showing them the pains of the Palestinians who are held in the prisons. That's humanly unacceptable, and those people breached all the limits of humanity, and we shouldn't even call them human beings.
Some reports have pointed to an alarming spike in so-called administrative detention since October 7th, mostly minors who were held without charges or without trial. How would you describe this travesty of justice?
The detention process is divided into several sections. I spoke about the first section, which is the interrogation and investigation into cases and operations carried out by Palestinian fighters who strive to restore their land. But there is another kind of detentions in which no interrogations take place, and subsequently the detainees are not subjected to related torture. However, they experience another kind of suffering as the detainee is imprisoned without charge or interrogation. Administrative detention is originally British. When Britain was ruling Palestine, it created administrative detentions. Later, the Israeli regime inherited that policy from the British. Under that policy, the detainee is imprisoned without a charge for 6 months that could be extended for another 6 months and later for another year and so on. Some people were jailed for 18 to 20 years under the administrative detention policy just because the regime's authorities suspected them, without evidence or proof. That's the height of crime. No other part of the world uses that policy. In fact, Palestine is the sole occupied country in the world. All the countries have been liberated, except Palestine. In Palestine, all inhumane laws are practiced. Many people were jailed under the administrative detentions. And that policy was not used against just 5, 10, 20, or 100 people. Before the Al-Aqsa flood operation, there were over 1,000 administrative detainees. But after Israel launched a brutal arrest campaign, the number of administrative detainees exceeded 3,000. They include doctors, engineers, ordinary people, and university students. Even minors are jailed under the administrative detention policy. I also want to mention one of the ugliest practices that I just remembered, which is the unexplained death of people in prison. Since October 7th, 11 people, including administrative detainees, died under torture. They were killed during just 4 months. Isn't that kind of insane? In return, you saw how Palestinians in Gaza treated the Israeli captives. They treated them humanely and shared their food with them, according to the Israeli captives' testimonies. We saw a released woman carrying her dog. While people in Gaza have no food, her dog was in a good condition. So the way Israeli captives are treated differ from the way Palestinians held in Israeli jails are treated. In Palestine, the Israeli captives are treated humanely, despite the war and destruction. In the Israeli regime, which claims to be a democracy, you see the height of ignobility.
At the same time, there are also heartening stories about detainees engaging in creative activities, inside jails. For example, Bassem Khandanjik recently released his book, A Mask in the Color of Sky, written inside of a jail and nominated for an international prize. Where does this never say die spirit come from?
Sometimes the individual who loves the life never submits to pressure and always looks for ways to develop himself and convey his message to the world, even from the prison. The big prison to which the detainee is sent after being interrogated is a school where the detainee learns from the professors who are also imprisoned. Imprisonment is an ordeal, but we turn it into a granting. Some people were illiterate when they entered prison, but they left it with college degrees. Some people memorize the Holy Quran in prison. We turn prisons into schools and universities. We reached agreements with universities in Gaza and Lebanon and contacted them through professors who are held in these prisons. That has helped educate the Palestinians. Palestinians are by nature intellectual and love knowledge and dissemination of science. So we saw them writing books. The book that you mentioned was nominated for an international award, so its author gained fame. But there are hundreds of other people who authored books while in prison, and their books are released and just need to be interpreted into English and other languages. So we turn the ordeal into a blessing through investing in knowledge and education inside these prisons. There were 11 brothers who got a PhD degree while they were in prison. Each year, about 150 people get a master's degree, either from Gaza University, Palestine University, Jinan University in Lebanon, or other universities. So the education process is ongoing in prisons, despite the attempts of the prison authorities to prevent detainees from learning. These attempts include tearing up papers and breaking pens. We even went on hunger strikes for more than 45 days in order to obtain a book, pen, or a notebook. So we were grabbing our right to education. At some point, we even forced the regime to give us access to some specializations in Hebrew universities. They only gave some of them that access with the aim of changing their ideas. Some experts in Hebrew affairs learned Hebrew inside prison and studied in Israeli universities. The Palestinians are heroes and generous. The Palestinian nation pursues freedom and knowledge. Like other nations, we want to preserve our dignity and freedom. We are the sole country in the world that's still occupied.
Thank you very much for being with us, Sheikh Talal Abdulrahman Sharim, a former prisoner of the Israeli regime and the head of the prisoners' files for Hamas. I appreciate you being with us. I'm Marzia Hashemi, and goodbye.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد عودك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرج.
السلام عليكم and welcome to Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. I'm really, really glad to have Brother Hussein Akbari and Fawad Haider with me today in the studio. Assalamu alaikum, Fawad Haider.
Salam, sir. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. I'm good. How about you?
I'm good, sir.
Alhamdulillah. Salam, Hussein. How are you?
Salamu alaikum. I'm fine.
Fine? All right. So everyone is fine here. So brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio, thank you so much for joining. Inshallah, today we will talk about Ayah 48, Surah Al-A'raf. Still, we are in Surah Al-A'raf. Ayah 48, page 156.
Six.
Right?
Yes.
Yes, in the middle of the page.
Yes, middle.
So, everyone, let's listen to the recitation of this ayah, and we'll get back to the explanation and the tajweed rules. Let's go.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. ونادى أصحاب الأعراف رجالا يعرفونهم بسيماهم قالوا ما أغنى عنكم جمعكم وما كنتم تستكبرون.
Great recitation. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. What a beautiful ayah. ونادى أصحاب الأعراف رجالا يعرفونهم بسيماهم قالوا ما أغنى عنكم جمعكم وما كنتم تستكبرون. Oh, oh, what a beautiful ayah. Wow, a great lesson we can learn from this ayah. And the occupants, or the ashab of A'raf, of the elevations, okay, the occupants of the elevations will call out to certain men.
Residents of like the heaven? Or?
No, ashab al-A'raf, those who will be on the top of
the hills.
The hills, yes. Yeah, A'raf, the place between heaven and hell, okay, there is a place, a high place, where people will be standing there, that we talked about it in the previous sessions. So those people who will be looking at the people in the heaven and the people in the hellfire. So they will see certain people, they will call out actually certain men whom they recognize by their marks, by their face. Okay? They knew them. The Ashab al-A'raf know those people, okay?
From this world, yeah. Or over there?
They're there in the Jannah, okay? They know that these are the people who will be entering hellfire. About people who will be who are entering heaven, we talked about it previously.
Yes.
This session, Allah talks about the people who will be entering hellfire. Look, قالوا, this Ashab al-A'raf tell them, okay? ما أغنى عنكم جمعكم. You are rallying or whatever you collected for yourself. Your wife, your children, your friends, all right, your workers, your best friends, your money, your house, huh?
Yes.
Your wealth, whatever you had collected for you in the world. ما أغنى عنكم. Did not avail you. They couldn't save you. They couldn't benefit you. If they are going to enter heaven, it means they didn't use their wealth in a proper way.
Yes, sir. If they used their wealth,
mm-hmm.
They wasted their wealth.
Actually,
They could store it mm-hmm. for the afterlife. How?
Yeah.
If they donated.
Oh, mashallah. Donated. Built schools.
And people masjids. Doesn't like wasteful people.
Yes. The universities, streets, huh?
Yes.
Help the community. Or at least do good deeds. So at least this could save you.
Yes.
But this money, for example, millions of dollars if somebody earn, or thousands of dollars if somebody gain, okay, or earn, every month or every year, these dollars can take him to the hellfire, and also these dollars can take him to the
heaven.
Heaven. So you should decide yourself what to do with your money. All right. So these people of A'raf will call them. قالوا ما أغنى عنكم. They didn't really avail you. وما كنتم تستكبرون. Nor what you used to disdain. Look, you were so rebellious to Allah Almighty. You're always like disobeying Allah Almighty, and you are proud of this.
That you disobeyed.
Okay? Yeah, you disobeyed. Like sometimes they are in like making fun of the religious people. The non-religious people make fun of the religious people. Hey, you, every time you go to masjid, then stop going to masjid. Let's go and enjoy. Let's go to the park. Let's go to these kind of places. Let's go and enjoy ourselves. Yes? And this type of people are just
talking nonsense.
Yeah. So in the day of judgment, they will understand what has happened. What they really had done. So, Now, this ayah talks about it. Refer to the Tafasir books, inshallah, if you want to learn more about the tafsir of this ayah.
الذين يذكرون الله قياما وقعودا وعلى جنوبهم.
If you see the Holy Quran in Surah Muzammil, ayat number 20, Allah Tabarak wa Ta'ala says, and recite as much as possible from the Quran. As much as possible.
رَبَّنَا مَا خَلَقْتَ هَذَا.
That's why they say one of the beauties of the eloquence of the fasahat and balaghat of the Quran is that whenever you open the Quran, it's as if it speaks to you today very, very clearly.
The Quran is a covenant of God for His creature. It is misaq. It is covenant for His servants. It is necessary for the Muslims to read this covenant and recite 50 words every day.
Hussein, we are ready to listen to you for a beautiful recitation. Ready?
Yes.
And correct.
Yeah, go on.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم ونادى أصحاب الأعراف رجالا يعرفونهم بسيماهم قالوا
أحسنت ما شاء الله. Now continue from the word قالوا.
قالوا ما أغنى عنكم جمعكم وما كنتم تستكبرون.
أحسنتم ما شاء الله. So ونادى أصحاب الأعراف. There is no important rule, تجويد rule. Yeah. Everything is easy. Just pronounce the letters correctly. صاد حاء عين همزة. The point is with the word رجالاً يعرفونهم that we practiced it in the previous session as well. Once again,
yes.
So what could you tell us about it?
So رجالا has a تنوين on it, mm-hmm. رجالاً, mm-hmm. and the word that comes after it is يعرفونهم. Mm-hmm. So as you see, the first letter is ya.
Mm-hmm. In the word يعرفونهم.
In the word يعرفونهم.
Okay.
Based on the نون ساكن rules and تنوين rules, here we have a تنوين, and after تنوين comes ya. And yeah, it's from the Yermalun letters, which are dedicated to Idgham.
Nice.
So the word changes, I mean the pronunciation changes to رِجَالَي يَعْرِفُونَهُمْ.
All right, Hussein, رِجَالًا يَعْرِفُونَ based on Idgham rule that Fawad well explained it. How do you read it?
رِجَالَي
أحسن. رِجَالَي يَعْرِفُونَهُمْ. Good job. يعرفونهم. For the meme sakin, which is followed by the letter ba, there's also an important rule. What is it? For what?
يعرفونهم بسيماهم. So
yes.
Here,
meme sakin.
يعرفونهم ends with meme sakin, and after that, the word starts with ba.
Ba.
So this is a rule outside of nun sakin, but it consists one of the rules from nun sakin, which is ikhfa.
Ikhfa. Good job. So it means you
hide the sound
hide
of
the
meme.
Sound of meme. How do you read it, Hussein? Ya'rifunahum. Read it.
Ya'rifunahum bisimahum.
Hassan, hide the sound of meme. Ya'rifunahum bisimahum. Good job. And qalu is look, bisimahum ends with mim sakin again, but the next letter is qaf. Qaf is not like ba.
Yes.
So you just read the
just
meme.
Read it.
Idhar. Simahum qalu. Yeah. Ma aghna ankum. The mad, you can extend it or skip it. عنكم نون ساكن plus كاف
إخفاء
إخفاء hide the sound of نون ساكن the rule إخفاء you might have seen in the تجويد books that's it you hide the sound of نون عنكم جمعكم وما كنتم again
إخفاء
إخفاء hide the sound of نون تستكبرون that's all so time to recite it I will recite it once Hussein and Fawad Haider will repeat brothers and sisters dear listeners as you're listening let's practice it ready everyone
yes
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
ونادى أصحاب الأعراف رجالا يعرفونهم بسيماهم قالوا
ونادى أصحاب الأعراف رجالا يعرفونهم بسيماهم قالوا
أحسنتم قالوا ما أغنى عنكم جمعكم وما كنتم تستكبرون
قالوا ما أغنى عنكم جمعكم وما كنتم تستكبرون
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
That's all from us for today, brothers and sisters, dear listeners. Thank you so much for being with us up to this time. See you, inshallah, in the next session. Stay with IRB English Radio, Fawad and Hussein Akbari. Thank you so much for being with us in this session. See you, inshallah, next session. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن
IRIB English Radio This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.